People here as camps, or kids have come to camp as campers. People here have kids that have come to camp as counselors. At one time or another, I had at least three lawnmowers that sat in this congregation's garages at one time that were in service up at camp. Work days, people come up and help work. Somebody, I believe, from this church lent me a horse trailer one time to move a horse that we were buying or selling. So there's a number of different ways that people have been involved. But one of the ways that you haven't been involved, which you could be involved, I'm going to show you pictures of the camp. How many of you have ever been to camp? Raise your hand. Okay, about half. I don't believe you've ever had a church function there. Am I right at that? Now, I'm here today. We're going to show you pictures, but I want to invite you next summer to have a church function at camp. Be it your picnic or whatever, come to camp and see firsthand what you're going to see in the pictures today. So that's where we're going to start. If I can figure out how to make this technology work. What you see on the screen there is day one, hour one of day camp. Last summer we did 3 day camps. Each of the day camps averaged about 90 kids each. So that's 3 weeks of 90 kids each. On top of that, we did 2 weeks of a regular resident camp. We did a basketball camp. And we have a church group that comes in and brings about 100 kids for the week. Comes in and uses our facilities, and we provide food service and activity staff. Okay, we're going to look at that picture a long time. There we go. Just put a few cabin group pictures in here so you can see. On these, the one summer, my wife divided the cabin groups up by colors. And the first year she did that, she got bandanas, and all the kids wore bandanas. And I wasn't really comfortable with bandanas because before I went to youth work at camps, I was youth work in inner cities, and bandanas were gang colors. So I had this personal thing that I had a hard time getting over that. So she got hats the next year, and you can see the kids wore hats. Campers go anywhere from age kindergarten up through 8th grade, and then once they go into 9th grade, they actually can come back and go in a counselor training program. The building that you see behind them there and the building that you saw behind in that first picture is our new multi-purpose building, the Sensenig Activity Center. We've been in that. This will be our third year. This picture here is not campers. That is all of the staff for one of the weeks of camp. One of the things you might notice in looking at that is we have young staff. On any given week, there's my wife and I, and there may be 4 to 5 other adults, but the majority of our staff is made up of kids, either high school or college age students that are there to serve. One of the first programs the camp had when it started was a horseback riding program. They still do that. It's especially popular with the girls. We have our own horses, which we keep year-round. And they have developed a program where the kids actually go through ranks. They learn different things about the horses. They learn different skills on a horse. It's not all just riding. You see this guy's here working hard cleaning a hoof out. I said horseback riding is extremely popular with the girls, sometimes not so much with the boys. This is a boys' cabin group at horses. I'm sure there's one or two boys that are actually out riding the horses, but most of them sit in the shade and just sit around, and it's a good time to congregate and talk. They just don't seem to have quite as much interest. Now, here's the boys' interest. What can be said about the horses for girls, the same is true with the boys with go-karts. We got go-karts one of the first years that Donna and I took over. And I remember my mother-in-law, who was the camp nurse, was all excited because she was worried about the danger involved in go-karts. And one of the things I did was called the insurance company to find out what it would do to our insurance premiums. So I called the agent up, and he did some checking. He said, "You have horses?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "Nothing's going to raise your premium higher than horses. It's not going to have any effect at all." And truth be told, we have not had many serious injuries on go-karts. The one we did was actually to a staff person, probably a staff person that some of you might know, but we'll let it go at that. Kids like riding the go-karts themselves, but they also like to take other kids for rides. And we need to watch that a little bit, because usually the goal when you're taking somebody else a ride is you want to scare them, which doesn't always lead to safe driving techniques. And then the younger kids that are too young to drive themselves, we would have staff members drive. There, he's on the roller coaster. See his hands up in the air? This is inside the Sensenig Activity Center, the new gym that we just built. When we built this, I think our rationale for needing this building was we needed a place for activities in the winter when it was cold, and we needed a place for activities during the summer when it was rainy. It didn't dawn on me when the building was being built how much we would use the building just to get out of the heat. Sometimes weeks of camp during the summer, it gets oppressively hot, and the kids would do almost anything in the gym for an hour just to go in and get out of the heat because the gym is air conditioned. Here's some other pictures. Archery, if I had to guess, I would say it's probably the most popular activity at camp. Both boys and girls like archery. We are a member of the National Archery Association and participate in a program they have called JOAD. It's Junior Olympic Archery Development. The kids are shooting at targets at standard lengths, shooting 30 arrows and being scored on those 30 arrows, and that's how they advance through the ranks. That intense instructor there is my son, John. He's been doing this for about 6 years. He inherited from his older brother, Jason, who inherited from their grandfather. And there's the Amazon archers, all the girls. We moved our archery range. It used to be up in the grove by the tabernacle, again, to get somewhat out of the heat. And a little more secluded spot a few years ago, we moved it down by the creek. And you can't see the creek in the background, but all those trees are on the bank along the edge of a creek. Now, I don't know if you can see from there, but you notice there are some arrows in this target that the girls were shooting at. And then there are some arrows in this target that the boys were shooting at. The boys are a little better at archery because it requires some muscle, and some of the younger girls especially struggle with that. This is a creek. We have a creek that runs through the center of the property, and the kids like to play in that, especially the younger kids. The older kids spend a lot of time catching crayfish, and there was one week this last summer. My son was a cabin counselor. And he and his cabin caught 13 crayfish, and his wife cooked, if that's the proper term, the crayfish. They had crayfish for supper one night. My son married a Russian girl, and she said they ate crayfish in Russian all the time. So maybe we ought to start feeding the crayfish, and we can make that a camp activity. There was a time many years ago we had a fishing contest, and we took all the fish And we thought we'd catch enough fish, and then we'd make fish for supper. And what I didn't think about is somebody needed to clean all those fish. So my father-in-law and actually his mother were troopers. They cleaned, I think it was 114 fish. They're not big fish, but they cleaned 114 fish. And we had enough fish to feed everybody for supper that evening and a little fish left over. And he kindly told me afterward, don't you ever do that again. So now we have catch and release fishing at camp. Moving from the creek, this is the pond. You see everybody wears their life jacket. I don't know, maybe I should take this picture out. That one guy there in the blue hat looks like he has a life jacket that's a little bit too big for him. Looks like he might slide out of that thing. We have a John boat. We have canoes. There's a picture of the pond on a good day. I say on a good day because look at that water. I mean, doesn't that look beautiful water? Sometimes we have duckweed, which is a floating algae on the pond. It was extraordinarily bad this fall, so much so that my son said the Canadian geese wouldn't land because they couldn't tell it was a pond. It looked like a yard. But it was all green, but at least in this picture it looks great. And you see that boat is probably as close to capacity as possible. It looks like the front is riding a little low there. And I don't know if you can tell, that girl has a butterfly in her hand. That's why she's so excited. It's amazing how much the kids get excited about things in nature. I mentioned the crayfish, butterflies, toads, frogs, and heaven forbid a cat happens to wander onto the camp property during camp. It will never escape. Here's some kids doing crafts. Anybody that's ever been to camp knows that crafts is an activity that they do. Now, they're preparing to make a campfire and make s'mores. Normally, our campfires are at night. These pictures actually come from a day camp. And when kids are there for a day camp, they're not there overnight, so you can't do the campfire at night. So we decided we're doing campfires in the day. And there they started the fire. They're starting to make their marshmallows. This is from two summers ago. We have team competitions at camp. And two summers ago, our competition theme had something to do with medieval armaments. You know, kind of like the knights in Europe in the Middle Ages, the way they did battle. And one of the ways they did battle is when they surrounded a castle and the people were holed up in the castle and they wanted to try and get in, they would either breach the walls, go over the top, or they would push rams through the doors, which were reinforced. So these kids, we thought they needed to practice pushing rams. So we had a contest. This is one cabin group. You can see another cabin group on the bank there watching. They had to push this ram up a slight incline, I think for about 250 feet, and they were timed in that, and that was how they did their cabin competition. Another form of warfare that you see out of that same time period is you have the knights on their mighty steeds with their long poles doing joust, right? So we thought that would be neat too. So here they're jousting. You see they're on their mighty steed. I think that's a 20-foot PVC pole with a marshmallow sticker taped on the end. And you see the balloon there in the target, and you can't see, there's actually a picture of a knight painted on the front of that styrofoam target. But that was them jousting. Another activity that everybody likes is wagon rides. An interesting story for this wagon. You can see that wagon's pretty full. when we're talking about camp age kids, we can get 40 kids on a wagon. It was a camp project, a Christmas project, probably 15 years ago. A group of businessmen got together and bought us a tractor. We had a tractor and we had a small wagon, and the small wagon we had was even too big for the small tractor, so they got us a bigger tractor. Not long after we got the bigger tractor, we found the frame of this wagon at the fire hall sale at Five Pointville there one year. And believe it or not, this frame, I think, came from a mobile home. When we got the frame, I had somebody cut it down. They cut 8 feet off of it because it was too long, and they moved the axles to reposition it. But we bought this at a sale, took it to the guy, said it's too long, cut it shorter. Didn't tell him how much to cut it shorter. He cut it shorter, moved the axles, put channels in so those uprights that hold the sides on would fit, and then brought it back to camp. And we took it and we put the pressure-treated floor on it and the sides. We assembled everything, used it to take kids' rides, and then 2 years later, my wife says to me, because some of the kids were complaining that the rides were hard, sitting on the wood floor was hard. She said, you know, my father got these mats from a school. We used them, we put them down in a room when the kids would wrestle on them. Says, why don't you see if the mats will fit in there? So we took these two mats, and they were the kind that Velcro together. So we put them together, and we laid them into the wagon, and there was not a half of an inch of clearance anywhere the whole way around the wagon. That's how well they fit. I'm sure Donna's dad did not know when he bought those mats that's what we would be using them for. And I'm sure all the people that constructed the wagon had no idea what size it needed to be, but God worked it all out, and we had mats for the wagon. This is Talent Night, and you can see some of the signs on the background deal with the Bible lessons and the themes. But Talent Night can normally has some of your traditional activities. People will sing. One year we had a kid get up and tell jokes for 5 minutes, Chuck Norris jokes, kids like that. But then there are also things that usually draw a little more attention. This is from 2 years ago, one of the boys' cabin groups in a dance routine. You can see them, they're getting ready there, and there they turned around, and they're ready to go. The kids like that. It was entertaining. This is the tabernacle building where we have our chapels and our Bible lessons. I believe right here you see these next couple slides. The kids are singing, but this is also, as I said, where they do their lesson time. Here the kids are doing a skit. Donna uses drama to help with her lessons, get the kids involved, so they're not just sitting listening to her talk. Unfortunately, when camp's a week long, though, everybody needs to read from their scripts. They can't memorize their lines. But these are kids. This particular year, the theme was Dare to be a Daniel, so I'm sure they're doing some sort of skit that had something to do with Daniel or his three friends in the lion's den. And this is the last photo. One of the things about camp is you can do your chapels or your Bible lessons in unique places. And here, you probably can't see it, but the reason my hands are out like that is I have a little skinny fishing rod. And I'm using fishing as an illustration to talk to the kids about how the disciples were fishers of men. I look at that picture and I can tell 40 years have not been as kind to me as what they should have been. I look a little large. Those pants look a little baggy. This picture would probably embarrass my kids. But I have one that would embarrass them even more. My wife showed me recently. She has we have slides. Anybody know what slides are? You know, used to have slides. She has a slide of me like 28 years ago. In the yard behind the lodge, the kids are sitting around on benches, and I have my guitar leading singing in a t-shirt and pair of shorts. Now, I want you to remember what shorts were like back then. Look at pictures of old basketball players. Remember, they weren't big and baggy. They were short and tight. And back then, I could probably get away with wearing short and tight shorts. Wouldn't look good anymore today, but my kids would be embarrassed by that too. But those are the pictures that we have for the camp. I laid my Bible somewhere. Am I allowed to speak from down here? Yes. It has varied through the years. There were times in the past when I actually started coming to camp with York Rescue Mission. Right out of college, I worked with an inner city program in York called Lighthouse Youth Center, which was a division of York Rescue Mission. And that's how I got to know Greenview. That's how I got to know my wife. And we took kids from the city of York up. After I left York, there was a time later on when I was involved at Water Street Rescue Mission with their youth, and they were taking youth to Greenview. Several years after that, Water Street Rescue Mission merged with Teen Haven, and Teen Haven had a camp facility, and the rescue missions all started taking kids from the city programs to the Teen Haven camp. Since that time, we've worked with a Word of Life club that meets in Reading. We do not have specific inner city weeks anymore, but we bring inner city kids to camp on scholarships so that they can attend camp. And we're doing that with groups in Reading. We did that with groups in New Holland. We also started working with, I don't know if you're familiar with a group called Crossfire Youth Ministries. It works primarily in a Cocalico school district, and they work with at-risk kids. I mean, the kids that they bring to camp, dad's in jail, mom's in rehab, living with grandma, just really difficult life situations. And what we do is bring them to camp and try and mainstream into our regular camps. That being said, I would say the majority of most weeks of camp, if you ask the kids, they would say they go to church. But if you ask follow-up questions, go to church may be defined as maybe twice in the last year. They don't know where they go to church. They don't know the pastor's name, but they know they go to church. And, you know, just unchurched in the sense of their Bible knowledge. When we get into stuff in Bible lessons, they really don't seem to have much Bible knowledge at all. Maybe before I go on, just take a time. If the slideshow or the pictures, any other questions that you might have, that I, because I'd like to leave here today feeling like I answered your questions, not I told you what I wanted to tell you. You have other questions? Okay. This church doesn't have a clock in the back. That's one of the things I like about camp. When I speak at camp, I start when I'm ready, and I'm done when I'm done. Can't get away with that in a lot of churches, so I need to keep track of where we're at here. They will. What, at 9:25 or so, they serve coffee and donuts in the back, right? One of the questions that I get asked a lot at camp, and I say I get asked a lot of the people that help support us. Camp is a nonprofit as far as the way we are organized legally, but it's also a nonprofit in the way we operate. Last year, we had our books showed income. But 70% of our income was donations. So you can see the business side of the camp doesn't make any money. The business side of the camp is the ministry, and we need to raise money to be able to do it. But a lot of the people who help support us, one of the questions I hear from them is, how many kids were saved? And I guess on the one hand, that's an important question, because you want to know that you're effective. You know, and it's a question that I'd like to have an easy answer for. How many kids were saved at camp last summer? And I say I'd like to have an easy answer because I don't think there is an easy answer. I can tell you how many kids made professions of faith to the counselors that were reported to me. You know, I can give you that number. But I don't know if that number is truly reflected of how many kids were saved. Another question I hear all the time is, are you having an impact? Are you making a difference? And if you were to ask me those questions at the end of the summer, again, I could tell you how many kids made profession. I could tell you, yes, I hope we make a difference. I think we make a difference. But, you know that idea that by their fruits you will know them? It's kind of nice to see where kids take that profession of faith that they make at camp. And you can't see where they're going to end up in that week they spend at camp. And sometimes you can't see where they're going to end up the next year when they come back. I've had kids, when we work with the inner city kids, a lot of kids from a nominal Catholic background, they've made professions of faith at camp 3 years in a row. And you try and explain to them, you know, you don't need to do this. If you've made a profession of faith, you've been saved. And I think somehow they get this penance or confessional idea, and every year at camp, I need to make a profession of faith. And we can't knock through that. You get a better idea of what kind of impact you've made 20 years, 30 years down the road. And one of the blessings that I'm beginning to harvest now is I get to see some of that. You know, I've been director at camp for 20 years. I've been involved at camp for 40 years. So I've seen a lot of kids. And I've seen kids that, I've seen inner city kids that have come to camp, made professions of faith at camp, and gone on to be Army chaplains, career men in the Army as chaplains. I've seen inner city kids come to camp, make professions of faith that are currently serving life in prison because they were involved in a drug deal that went bad and somebody got killed. You know, you can tell down the road what kind of an impact you've had. I'm blessed. Yesterday, we had four kids. Now, two of them were my sons, so that probably you can't count. But there were two other brothers that grew up at camp. I mean, they started probably when they were in second grade, came to camp every year until they were in eighth grade. And ninth grade, they started as counselor training and went 4 years of high school. And in the case of one of the kids, I think it was 2 years after that they served at camp. The four of them were up at camp putting a 16-by-8-foot screen on the wall inside the Sensenig Activity Center. So we had a place to project videos and stuff like that during the summer. One of those kids graduated from high school, went to work for an audiovisual technology company. Camp must have had an impact on him because he was involved a few years ago. You remember Donegal built a new high school, and while they were building the new high school, they had some sort of fire in the paint room. And there was smoke damage in the building. And this AV company had just completed installing all the sound system in their new gym. And the insurance company says, you can't clean it. You either need to leave it like it is or you need to replace it. So they replaced it. And he talked to his employer. And we got over $1,000 worth of speakers, brand new, never been used, to hang in our gym. I think he was a little impressed that his employer was willing to do that. So a few weeks later, he went back and said, well, now we put the speakers in, but we don't have a sound system to power the speakers. Can you help us out you know, on the cost for sound system. And his employer said, well, I can not only help you out, I'll give you the sound system. So he gave us the sound system. And then we needed some other stuff. And I guess he was afraid to go back and ask the third time. So he paid for it himself. And kids just keep coming back. When I showed you the staff picture, you know, all the young kids, I would say 90% of those were campers. I do not go to schools. I do not go to LBC, you know, Messiah. It's not PCB anymore. What is it, Karen? And I'm not criticizing it, but I don't go to schools recruiting. I don't go out recruiting people for summer jobs. I recruit people that want to be involved in ministry. And when we pay them, we can. And when we can't, they're okay with that, because the reason they're there is they believe in the ministry. So I think that's important. When we first started, when Donna and I took over for her parents, we had campers coming whose parents were campers. Being there 20 years, we have campers coming now whose grandparents were campers. And they keep coming back. And they send their kids back because they think they're getting something of value. So I think that's a better question. I know you want to know how many kids are being... I started out with how many kids are being saved. It's important that kids are being saved, but it's hard to tell. But through time, you can see the impact that you have on kids through changed lives. I wanted to share with you just a little bit. How do you teach kids at camp? You know, we're starting with kindergarten in some cases, day camps, kindergarten. Resident camp, I think last year, started at second grade. You know, you don't give them my theology book from college and say, here, read this. You know, you need to figure out how can you present the message in a way that they comprehend it. I look at my own life. You were to ask me, when was I saved? Somebody asked me that. Say, when were you saved, Steve? Would you do that? I'd be glad to answer that question, I think. My mother tells me I was saved when I was 5 years old. We had a discussion, I prayed a prayer, and she said I was saved when I was 5 years old. Don't remember it. I do distinctly remember when I was 12 years old, they were having evangelistic services at church, and I remember going home one night, laying in my bed, realizing I was a sinner, realizing I deserved God's wrath and anger, and asking Jesus to be my Savior. I remember that. And I won't say that night didn't change my life, but that I was 12 years old. And I went through college, or high school, and in high school I got involved in some of the stuff that high school kids get involved in, that looking back, you probably wish, gee, I wish I wouldn't have gotten involved in that. And when I was a sophomore in college, I had my first motorcycle accident. Now I say my first because I had a second. When we started building that new gym, the main fundraiser to pay for that was a motorcycle ride at camp. And the first year I went on that motorcycle ride, I wrecked with my daughter on the back. So that was my second. And we've survived both. But my first motorcycle accident, people with near-death experiences, have you ever talked about anybody seeing their life path before them? I'm here to tell you, at least for me, that is a literal fact. From the time I knew my motorcycle was not going to remain on two wheels till the time I actually hit the asphalt, it seemed like the motorcycle went in slow motion and I just, 20 years of my life passed before me. And the following days in the hospital, I had a very clear recollection of the stuff I did, the life I lived. And and I was not excited about it. I was not proud of it. So there was a third time that I can say, well, here I made maybe not a profession of faith, but a recommitment. And that type of story is not all that uncommon. When we do campfires at camp, a lot of times the counselors will give testimonies. And you'll hear that a lot of times. Kids say, well, mom says I made profession when I was young. This is when I did it. Then I walked away. And you know, that's not an uncommon story. And I used to wonder, well, when was I, you know, when was I actually saved? And I guess after years of wrestling with that, with coming to the conclusion that I believe my mom, you know, I believe I was saved as a young child. And I came to that conclusion because in reading through the scriptures, it tells us that kids have all they need to know to accept Christ. They don't know everything. Here's a secret. We as adults don't know everything. But kids have all they need to know to come to a saving knowledge of Christ. And that's why I'm involved in youth ministry, because I think the kids that are there, as young as they are, have all they need to know to come to a saving knowledge of Christ. We talk at camp a lot about the story of Noah, because one of the things that kids can relate to is stories. And at camp, kids get spiritual input in one of two ways. One is the Bible lessons. And my wife, for the last, oh goodness, 25 years, has written Bible curriculum for camp every summer. And some people would look at us and say, why? You know, why are you reinventing the wheel? There's publishing houses that put out curriculum that you can use. Why would you do that? And I think the answer is, back when we were working with inner city kids, one year we ordered Bible curriculum. And when you order curriculum, you get samples. This is what the lessons are like. So we saw this is what the lessons were like. We thought that would work. So we ordered the curriculum. The curriculum comes in. We're having a program for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade inner city students. The first lesson in the material is on the virgin birth. And it's presented as, here's Mary. Mary's a young teenage girl who's not married, and she has a kid. What a miracle. And there's kids sitting there in the class that have kids. It's not a miracle to them. It's a fact of life. Now, they don't understand the virgin birth part, but the material that was printed just totally missed the target group. And we've seen that happen time and time again. So every year, Donna will start in October, and she'll actually write the curriculum for the Bible lessons. She comes from an education background. Her training is in elementary education. She does lesson plans. Right now, because of the size of the groups, when they get up to 90 kids, you don't do 90 kids, you know, ranging from kindergarten to sixth grade in the same Bible lesson. So my daughter-in-law, who's a first grade teacher, takes half the younger kids. And Donna has all the lessons plans. You know, all that's done. I'm more a seat of your pants type of guy. I wait till the kids show up at camp, and I talk to the kids that are there that week, and I figure out what the issues they are that they have to face. And then I figure out what I'm going to talk to them about at the campfires. But a lot of times I come back to Noah, because I think kids, if they can understand the story of Noah, they can understand the message of salvation. And just let me point out a few parallels to you. If you look, and we're starting, this is in Genesis 6 through 13, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's a lot of material. But you should know, Noah lived at a time when sin was rampant, sin permeated the earth. In Genesis 6, it says the earth was corrupt in God's sight, full of violence, and God saw how corrupt the people had become. Does that sound like the world we live in today? I mean, is sin rampant in the world in which we live. I think the kids can relate to that. Kids don't need to be aware about world events and what's happening all over the world, even though they are more so today than probably we were as kids. Kids know sin is rampant just by what happens to them in school. You know, the way they get bullied by other kids in school. Young people seem to have an extreme sense of what's fair. Those of you that had kids, you ever heard your kids say that's not fair? And a lot of times it isn't fair. And that's because we live in a world that's sin. And God's holiness requires him to deal with sin. In Noah's time, God said, I'm going to put an end to people, and I'm going to destroy the people and destroy the earth because of the sin. But it tells us that Noah found favor. And let me read just two verses, 8 and 9. And this is from the New International. I've used a New International for, and the New International for camp, because it's easy for the kids to understand. And the New American Standard as my study Bible for 30-some years. My church is changing to a different version. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, but regardless. It says, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah and his family. He was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Why do you think he found favor? And I'll suggest to you, it wasn't because he was a righteous man. Because look at the order there. It says, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. I don't know that I can answer the question why Noah found favor. But I know for us as believers, the only reason we're a believer is we found favor in the eyes of the Lord. If we went out on our own to find him, we were not going to find him unless we... Noah found favor. And he was righteous, but if you look later on in Genesis when it's talking about Abraham, it says, Abraham believed the Lord, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And I think in the same sense, Noah wasn't righteous because he was a good person. Noah was righteous because he believed God. He tried to be a good person. And in the community in which he lived, the people that knew him, they might have thought of Noah as righteous just because he was a good guy. They might have also thought of Noah as a bit crazy because he was building this big structure. But they might have thought of Noah as a good guy. But it says he was righteous and blameless. And then it says something very interesting. It says he walked with God. Can you think of other people in the scriptures that walked with God? Think about Adam and Eve before the sin in the garden. It says daily they walked with God. Suffering from brain freeze. Was it Elijah or Elisha that walked with God and was no more? Enoch. That's real brain freeze. Yeah. When it talks about walking with God, that talks about relationship, doesn't it? Relationship. You're spending time. We don't walk a lot in our world. We're rushing everywhere. I can remember when my wife and I were dating, we used to go on walks. And maybe a little bit a step up from a walk, we used to go horseback riding all the time. My wife is learning to drive a motorcycle right now. And we've been going on motorcycle rides. And she sent something to me just the other week when we came back for a ride. She likes riding the motorcycle, but she said, it's not as if we can really talk or anything. You see, when you walk, you have a relationship. When you walk, you can communicate. When you walk, you can talk. So Noah had that. You look at the story of Noah, and who was it that designed the ark? Did Noah design the ark? He didn't, did he? Noah built the ark. But God was a designer. The ark was God's planned vehicle for Noah's salvation. Does God have a planned vehicle for our salvation today? He does. That vehicle is His Son, Jesus Christ. Just as Noah and his family were saved because they were in the ark, we today can be saved if we put ourselves in Christ Jesus. Noah had a faith that compelled him to take action. Paul talks about this too. You know, you tell me you have faith, I'll show you I have faith. You know, I have faith too, but I'm going to show you I have faith. Noah was the one that built the ark. Again, building the ark probably did not make a lot of sense to the other people that lived in the community. Contrary to what the latest movie, Noah came out, you know, all the people wanted to get in. I don't think anybody was interested in getting in the ark with Noah because they didn't believe what Noah was telling them. They didn't believe it. They weren't interested in helping to build it. They didn't believe it. But Noah built the ark. Noah did everything as God commanded him. And when he was done, God brought the animals down. The animals went in. And you know what the final step was before it started to rain? Or as it started to rain? The door was shut. The door was sealed. And who shut the door? God shut the door. Yeah. And to me that says if God shuts the door, the door's not opening until God's ready to open the door. You know? And we as believers have a seal too. The seal is the Holy Spirit. And that's God's promise. That He shut the door and kept us in that vehicle of salvation. All that being said, was Noah perfect? He wasn't. He went through the entire thing that happened with the flood in the ark. And when he came out, he built an altar and he worshiped. But you don't go through many chapters and you find Noah drunk. And you don't need to be a Christian. You can be a Jewish person. There's enough in the Old Testament to tell you that drunkenness is a sin. So here we have Noah who was saved, but he's drunk. And you know, a lot of the ways that Satan tries to get to us today, especially young people, after they make that profession of faith, after they accept as Christ as Savior, is he tries to convince them it didn't work because you're not perfect. You know, you still fail. Didn't you just do that yesterday, this afternoon? Would a Christian do that? Being saved doesn't mean you're perfect. Being saved means you're forgiven. Being saved hopefully should mean you're in a process. You're growing towards maturity. I'm going to need to stop. Again, questions. Are there questions you have either about the camp, the ministry, Donna and myself? I'll tell stories about her. I'm not afraid to do that. Any questions? Well, the day camps are 90 each. When Millersville comes, that's usually another 100 people. The resident camps have not grown much in the last 5 years. We're probably another 100 with the resident camps. And then the basketball camp. I'd say maybe 600 people that are actually there at camps. Now we do retreats year round. Since we opened the new building, the activity center, we're doing after school programs. We start typically in November when daylight savings time ends and run through March, and do age appropriate, like a fourth through sixth grade boys club, where they'll come in, they'll play in the gym, and they'll be there for an hour and a half. We'll take 15 minutes and do a devotional sometime in the middle of that hour and a half. And then we do event type things too. I figured out, you saw the picture of the tractor and the wagon. That tractor, I think, originally cost us like $15,000. The dealer sold it to us new, below cost. And there were a bunch of businessmen that put the money together to buy it. Last year for a presentation, I tried to calculate how many kids have gone on wagon rides on that thing. And I figure at $15,000 for the tractor and another $1,000 for the wagon, wagon rides on that, we're to the point where they're costing about 25 cents each. Because there are just so many kids that go on wagon rides on that. Put hay in it in the winter, just sit on the floor in the summer. A lot of kids love that. During the school year, we probably have retreat groups in twice a month where they're in for the weekend. And then we have some other special event type things too, as well as the after school. Anyone else? I'm going to stick around. I'd be glad to talk to you between services or after the second service. Again, I want to thank you for the help that you have provided us for the last 20 years. It's been a growing process for Donna and I, as well as the kids. A lot of times we think we're the teachers. You know, they're the people that are learning. That's not the case. We've made mistakes. We're learning too. But again, thank you for your support.